Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Morning, Mark.
Good morning, Francis.
How are you this morning?
Just a laugh a day.
We're a laugh a day is not very much.
All right. Laugh a minute, laugh an hour.
I had a friend who used to say, you know, how are you feeling? I feel like $1 million. He would say, yeah, I feel like 25 bucks.
That's a bad day.
That's a bad day.
That's a bad day. Even you can't even do the, you know, Paris on 40 bucks a day.
We're going to have, later on in the show, we're joined by two guests today. We're joined by Peter Hoffman, chef and owner of Savoy Restaurant, and Jessica Prentice, who's the author of a book called Full Moon Feast, Food and the Hunger for Connection. And we're going to talk with them about integrity, about real restaurants, about chefs who make a difference in their community, about people who view restaurants as an important place. People to just come together. I mean, from the casual place where people come together to talk, to connecting with farmers and producers of food, to having an ongoing conversation with people.
I think it is probably the most important thing that we do.
Okay, now the least important thing, I'd say, you know, I have some criticisms of David Burke, and I like him as a guy. He seems like a nice enough fella. He's a celebrity chef, but he invented flavor sprays, which are these just...
If you listen to the show, you know that we just have to mock because they're horrible.
You can go to our website and look at an archive of the show. They're these little spritz bottles with David Burke's picture on them, and they're the flavor of pesto, the flavor of bubblegum, the flavor of this to spritz on your food. They're disgusting.
Yeah. You know, this is a big-name chef, and I don't want to make fun of his products, but he's forcing me to, so I'm going to.
This is the Dispatch from New York City. This is in the L.A. Times. Here's a review of a restaurant by Regina Schrambling, special to the Times. Why are two women, whose bikini days are behind them, referring to herself, Regina Schrambling is, sitting down to dinner in the just-opened Hawaiian Tropic Zone in the American Heartland Zone of the Times Square on Friday night? We certainly haven't come for the two-story wall of plasma TV screens in the restaurant, or the waterfall, or especially the unsettling experience of being waited on by taut young bodies covered in less fabric than our napkins.
Safe to say, that's not me.
Okay, David Burke is the chef at the Hawaiian Tropic Zone, where you can go and get served by young models in bikinis, very, very skimpy bikinis.
I don't understand why a famous chef wants to be chef of a glorified Hooters.
I mean, it's a go-go bar, okay? And I object to it. I've been there 7 or 8 times.
And each and every time I stand up and I say, I object!
I'll have the wings. No, I have to say, look, I don't have a problem if you want to go to a go-go bar. I've been to go-go bars, okay? I'm fine with it. Just bring some soggy $1 bills and go to the go-go bar. But to dress this up, there's just a difference, you know? Why do we pretend like it's not a gentleman's club? Because, look, okay, here's the deal. A bikini is just a bathing suit. Until you put on high heels, then it's lingerie, okay? And if you want to be served by people wearing lingerie, it's, you know, there is a distinction between sex and everything else, for God's sake. And so, you know what? I don't take you seriously as a
restaurant.
I'm
not going to take the food seriously,
no,
that's for sure.
Well, I know, but the food is good. It says here the food is pretty good. It doesn't say it's great, but it says it's pretty good. But I guess what I'm saying is we as restaurateurs have more of a responsibility. And look, if David Burke weren't holding himself out to be serious, and he talks a lot about how he's, you know, pushing the envelope and change, and he wants to be part of the discussion on food. And okay, so we're part of the discussion. The bikini-clad waitress does not have a place in a serious restaurant. Hawaiian Tropic Zone is the latest in a series of outsized restaurants that moved into Manhattan. Here's some snitches from the review. Snippets from the review. The Tropic Zone demands attention from the second you sit down. When the butter is served on a slab of salt, the table also comes outfitted with a little box containing pencils and ballot. Now, here's where we go. The table also comes outfitted with a little box containing pencils and ballots. to judge the waitress pageant, which happens at 9 every night.
So you're saying that waitress pageants don't happen in serious restaurants? Is that what you're telling me?
I didn't say it, but I implied it. You know what? Here's another thing. Look, I grew up in a house with three older sisters. And again, if you want to watch pornography, have fun. Mm-hmm. You know, go download it and enjoy yourself. You want to go to a go-go bar. And like I said, I occasionally will find myself in a go-go bar or meet a friend or whatever.
I'm sorry to hear
I know
that.
You hate go-go bars. Mark hates anything like that. But look, that's fine. But we're working every day of our lives to make this to show everyone how this is a respectable profession.
That is profession. Right. That's exactly
I have young women and men, but young women weren't the case. There was a guy named Frank Panico who was a friend of mine. Mm-hmm. He's dead now, so I can say he didn't hire women. And that was his thing. And I say, Frank, you're an idiot. Every time you get a resume of a qualified woman, will you please just send it my way? And I got some great waitresses that way.
Yeah.
But you know, that's over. And so I have some very professional, very intelligent, very hard-working young women who work for me, who sometimes, when they're the maitre d' or they're the sommelier, even though they have knowledge, they walk up to a table, and the table doesn't want to hear from them. They want the guy in the suit. Mm-hmm. And that's sad, and we're trying to change that. And look, you've got Mary Ewing Mulligan, master of wine. You've got Helen Turley, the most sought-after winemaker in the world. You've got Andrea Immer, master sommelier. You know, there are a lot of professional women here in the restaurant business. It's just, look, I don't have a problem with there being strip joints. But and of course I don't have a problem with restaurants and professionalism in restaurants. But there's a disservice here. There's a disservice to women to say, yeah, put the babe in the bikini and let's see your hooters.
I also think that there's another point here that
needs to be
made.
Let me just finish. The thing is, the problem is, I don't care if you do that, but we need to not take you seriously as a restaurant. We need to say, this is just a go-go bar, and they have some decent food, and it's a gimmick, and it's a sham, and it's crap.
Mm. Well, my next point is, you know, and why I felt the need to respond to Burke's comments in this particular, and this article appeared in the LA Times. But, you know, one of the things he says is, you know, it's the days of the small fine dining restaurants are over. And you want to read the quote, Francis?
Yeah, Burke says, the days of the 70-seat fine dining restaurant are on the way out. You've got to turn and burn or charge super high prices. Once you start paying volume, it gets easier. He says, every dish on Tropic Zone's menu is designed to have high-quality ingredients that can be executed for volume and served by a woman with nice boobies. No, I added that. But no, David, they're not on the way out. And all of our listeners want to go to a restaurant that's owned by a man or a woman who doesn't have to wear a bikini.
The next line of this, the trick is not letting the diner catch wind of the wizardry. And you know what? If you think that that's what it's about tricking the diners into not noticing your wizardry, or, you know, that you want to show them scantily clad women so they don't notice that the food isn't what it should be because the place is so big, well, then you're saying something about the food that you're preparing.
Well, and I don't want to knock the food, even if the food is great.
I haven't tasted the food. I'm truly not commenting.
But I guess what
I'm commenting on this statement that you're making.
And what I'm saying is, even if the food is great, I have a problem with it. I have a huge problem with it, and I think that it's a different thing. It's a go-go bar that serves good food, okay? Mm-hmm. It's a go-go bar that serves good food. Let's call it what it is. Tip your waitress with soggy $1 bills, or in that place probably soggy $100 bills. and that's fine. But we're about real restaurants. We're about coming together. We're going to talk with a couple of very serious people. We're going to talk with Peter Hoffman and Jessica Prentice in just a moment about real restaurants and real food in real time. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. We are joined right now by our friend Peter Hoffman, who we've had on the show before, who's a big influence in our early career. He is the chef and owner of Savoy Restaurant in New York City.
Peter, welcome to the show.
Well, it's great to be here again.
Well, Peter, thanks for coming on, and we're going to talk about a couple of things today. We're going to have a little later in the show, we're going to be joined by a woman named Jessica Prentice, who's going to be doing a dinner with you. She writes a lot about cooking by the cycles of the moon. But I came across an article a while back, and I've been meaning to speak to you about the pawpaw. There was a dinner at your restaurant back in September when Slow Food USA bestowed its Betsy Linden Award on a gentleman who is more responsible than anyone for bringing back the traditional American fruit of the pawpaw. Now, and it was held at your restaurant because, well, you're the kind of guy who would serve something like a pawpaw. And we, many years ago, what was it, Mark, 99?
It's a while ago. It's got to be at least 6 years ago.
We had pawpaw on our menu for a while. And
oh, really?
We
yeah.
thought, like Tigger, we were the only one. But but no, you up us again.
Well, that's great. Where were you getting your pawpaws from?
I don't even recall.
There was a company that was shipping it, but it was very, very, obviously the season was very short. And it was very, very difficult to get without getting damaged fruit.
And we read about the pawpaw, and then I went on a mission to find pawpaws. And we had them for one season.
Good for you, Francis.
It was.
Aren't they wonderful?
They're wonderful.
They really are
wonderful.
Aren't
they incredibly delicious?
Will you tell people about pawpaws?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, they're a tropical fruit growing in the Appalachian Mountains.
And they're indigenous to the Northeast.
That's right.
Isn't that crazy?
Or mid-Atlantic, you know, sort of like Maryland, Virginia, Kentucky, Tennessee. They taste, it's tropical fruit.
It tastes
like
a mango.
Like mango and guava, and but a wonderful creaminess in the texture. And instead of that big pit that you get with a mango in the center, there's a set of, there's two rows of brown seeds that are sort of like large dried beans or something.
You know.
And you scoop them out, and we just had a blast working with the fruit. I mean, we made daiquiris with it, and I made some smoothies at home for my kids, and then we did a salad with crayfish and a pepper vinaigrette. It's wonderful fruit.
You know, I remember reading about this pawpaw in 98, 99, or whatever it was that I read about it. And back then you could hardly get them in the East Coast, even though they're grown around here. We couldn't get them for the restaurant. It took a long time to figure out how to do it. But I remember that I thought, God, I've been in the restaurant business my whole life. And here's a fruit from this area that I've never heard of before.
Or tasted.
Right. And you know, when you read about it, the Indians and the settlers and farmers through the 1800s and the early 1900s, they were normal.
Right. This fruit was pretty prolific in this area.
Where did you come across the pawpaw?
Well, it all came about because of this Betsy Leiden Award that you referred to. Is that Betsy Leiden was a New Yorker and very active in the local and seasonal food movement, and she died an untimely death from cancer a few years ago. And her husband and a group of friends, of which I count myself, decided to set up a fund and give an award each year to somebody who was trying to change the face of local and seasonal food supply. And so we take nominations each year, and the winner, sort of narrowed down from lots of people doing interesting things around the country, this year was Neil Peterson, who's down in Westford, Harpers Ferry, and Virginia, and propagating new varieties of pawpaws. And so I had never tasted them before.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it was all a treat for me.
When you get these things, you're like, this couldn't possibly grow in the northeastern United States.
Right.
It does seem like a tropical fruit, as we said earlier.
Yeah. And as Mark said, they're fragile. They don't ship well. I mean, so when you say, well, how come that they haven't proliferated, that's part of it. It's a short season, and they're delicate. At this point, I mean, it's fruit that it freezes well. It's I don't think there's anything that should be standing people in the way of, even down in that region, scooping the flesh, throwing it in a Ziploc bag, and holding it and shipping it out.
And you know what's funny is, Peter and Mark and I are all foodies. When you find a new flavor, you know, I mean, how am I 40 years old and finding a new flavor, you know?
Right. And it's not a new flavor that somebody made with a laser beam.
Right.
It's a new flavor
that
actually grows out of the
earth. No laboratory food here. This is just off the tree.
Well, and you got to go to Peter's restaurant, Savoy in New York. It's inspirational. Peter's been green market driven since Mark and I were in diapers. Not exactly. Didn't mean to make you feel old there, Peter.
No, but I don't feel old. But we've been around for 17 years, and that's what our cuisine is based on.
And it's tremendous. There are a whole series of dinners, and actually right now they have a mushroom menu going on that you can order. And you're going to do a dinner with Jessica Prentice, who has a wonderful book on cooking by the cycles of the moon. And she's going to join us by telephone after this short break, and we'll all have a little chat together by cooking by the cycles of the moon.
Great.
So stick with us to listen to us. We talk with Peter Hoffman and Jessica Prentice about this dinner that you can come up and attend and this book that you can get your hands on. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1125.
Today we are proud to present Jackie Naylor.
Once upon a time, New Year's Eve was a night for swank jazz, champagne, and caviar. Ring in 2007 at just such a gathering with us. The Restaurant Guys present a New Year's Eve jazz concert at the Crossroads Theater starring Ms. Jackie Naylor. Jackie's been called the new voice of jazz by Vogue magazine. Jazz Times says, in the never-ending Next Big Thing sweepstakes, bet on Jackie Naylor. She's headlined internationally, she's played with Michael McDonald and David Sanborn, and on New Year's Eve, she'll play to a sold-out crowd at the Crossroads Theater right next to our restaurants. Dine before or after the show at either one of our acclaimed restaurants. There are hotel accommodations within walking distance, one of the best jazz singers in the country, two of the best restaurants in the state, an evening not to be forgotten. Go to stageleft.com or Catherine Lombardi.com for details, reservations, and menus, or call 732-828-4444. Put the swank back in New Year's Eve. Spend it with the Restaurant Guys. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. We've been talking with Peter Hoffman, our friend and the chef owner of Savoy Restaurant in New York City. And now joining us is Jessica Prentice, author of the book Full Moon Feast, Food and the Hunger for Connection. Jessica also writes a newsletter called Stirring the Cauldron. Stirring the Cauldron, Jessica, are you a good witch or a bad witch?
I'm a good witch.
That's excellent. Excellent.
Are you sure?
Actually not a witch.
All the bad witches say they're good witches.
Yeah. Now, talk to us about Full Moon Feast. This is cooking by the cycles of the moon. What do the cycles of the moon have to do with cooking?
Well, it's not exactly cooking by the cycles of the moon. It's more that I use the lunar calendar as you move through the year as a way to talk about food and what I'm interested in with food. It's more about reconnecting to our ancestors' ways of being with food, their knowledge and their wisdom about food. And it just so happens that the old-fashioned sort of old farmer's almanac calendar really provided a great way for me to talk about what I'm interested in.
So is it even a bigger breakdown than talking about seasonality? It's you're breaking things down into you know, 13 individual areas instead of four?
Yeah, well, I think it's you know, it's about digging a little deeper. It's really about understanding that before industrial agriculture and the importation of food and refrigeration and grocery stores and all of this, people's relationship to food moved through the year in a pretty profound way. You had a very different experience of food at different times of the year. And the old farmer's almanac names of the moons and the indigenous names of the moons reflected that, because food is so central and was so important to these communities. So they would actually name the moon at that time of year after what was happening in nature. And a lot of times that had to do with the food source.
When you talk about The lunar calendar's difference from our Gregorian calendar that we normally follow, many people don't realize that if you follow the lunar calendar, sort of it shifts. The relationship between the two calendars shift, and a certain moon may happen in the winter one year and in the spring, you know, as time goes forward. Isn't that right?
Well, yeah, unless you have to do something to recalibrate it. What it is that the lunar and the solar calendars are not perfectly aligned. So you have, I don't know, something like 12.41 lunations in every solar year. And
right.
So you have to do something. So it's more than 12, but less than 13. So
all right.
If you're following a lunar calendar, you have to do something to recalibrate with the solar calendar.
When we come back, we're going to recalibrate right after the news. We're going to be talking with Jessica Prentice and Peter Hoffman about a dinner they have coming up where you can go and actually have some of the food and talk about it, or hear Jessica Prentice talk about the food and our relationship with food at Savoy Restaurant in New York City. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Today we have joining us our friend and chef owner of Savoy Restaurant in New York City, Peter Hoffman, and also Jessica Prentice, who is an author whose book is Full Moon Feast, Food and the Hunger for Connection. You guys are going to be doing a dinner together at Savoy Restaurant. Based on your book and your writing and your work in food, Jessica, what's the idea of the dinner? What's going to happen there?
Peter, you want to take this one?
Sure, I'll take it. You know, when I read Jessica's book, I really thought it was exciting to start thinking about the lunar cycle because, you know, there's ways that that beyond sort of the shortest day and the longest day of the year, solstices and equinox, we don't really attach a whole lot of seasonality around or have a sense of seasonality through the sun. And yet, when you then think about different times of the year, of course, we've all heard of the harvest moon, that then you start to say, yeah, there are these other moments that happen year in and year out that I'm in touch with as a cook, as a shopper, as someone out there experiencing the weather in the world, and even in downtown New York City. And so it was exciting to me to see Jessica write about that, and we decided that we would build a menu around the late season part of her book, which the two moons that she writes about in the late fall are the blood moon and the snow moon. And the blood moon, Jessica may want to talk about it a little bit later, but the blood moon is about game and that time that we're eating meat or that we're killing the animals that we've been raising all year long through the good season to preserve us and tide us over through the non-growing season. The snow moon also is sort of a little bit deeper into the end of the fall and the winter, but we're reflecting the idea that we're putting things by, that we grabbed items at the peak of their season when the taste was perfect, and we're going to bring them back in a time when less is available, so that we can cherish and celebrate the bright, bright flavors of summer, even though it's a cold night and we've got a fire in the fireplace.
Well, one of the things I think that we've gotten away from as a country that, you know, the belief is, well, you know, I can get a strawberry anytime I want, so I don't need to put up strawberries when they're right in season. I can get one of those white cardboardy things from California or Guatemala pretty much anytime I want. And I think that what we've lost a little bit, and hopefully what you're retaking, is kind of what you alluded to, which is putting up fruits and taking things during their prime season, their peak time, and being able to can or jar them and use them at later times in the year when you preserve them.
Absolutely. I mean, it's nice to be able to say hello to things, to old friends that you haven't had for a number of months, and that come back because it's time of the year again, and also to say goodbye and eat the last string beans or know that you're having the last tomato, and that the joy, the salivating when it comes back is all the greater and gives personal joy, as opposed to, as you said, that everything is ubiquitous and omnipresent.
You know, one of the things that's interesting about running a restaurant is when, you know, we can have even the same dish or the same preparation of a dish on our menu over the course of a season. And as the, you know, the berries get better or change or the tomatoes are different year to year, some people are shocked and they say, well, this isn't exactly the same as I had it last time. And, you know, the response is, yeah, exactly. Isn't that cool? So, Jessica, why did you write your book? What did you hope to communicate in your book?
Oh, well, you know, I think all my life has been sort of, I've been kind of struggling with these issues, and really, especially as sort of a teenager and a young woman, I really felt like our food system didn't really feed me. I mean, it kept my belly full, but it didn't feed my hunger for connection. It didn't connect me to the earth. It didn't connect me to other people. It didn't connect me to my ancestors, to my foremothers. And I think the book was really, you know, it was about my struggle to feed my own hunger for connection and then wanting to offer to other people some of what I've learned on that journey.
Just so everyone who's just joined us knows who we're talking to, we're talking with Peter Hoffman, chef and owner of Savoy Restaurant, along with Jessica Prentice, whose book is called Full Moon Feast, Food and the Hunger for Connection. There's a dinner coming up at Savoy if you want to go and talk about this with Peter and Jessica in person and have something to eat. And actually, Mark and I might try and go to are going to try and go to this thing as well. Jessica, how do you feel, and Peter, I'll throw this out to you as well, we love food as a place to come together. I think a restaurant as a locus of community is probably the most important purpose a restaurant can serve. It's a place where people can turn off the television and sit down and talk to each other. But how does eating seasonally make connections for you? We'll start with you, Jessica.
Well, like I said, it's, you know, food was one of the ways in which human beings experienced this profound sense of connection. And one of the levels of connection is to each other, which is what you're talking about, coming together around food and community. The word companion means somebody you break bread with. It's always been very, very important to do that. But also, food has historically been a way that we connect to our place on earth, where we live. This is, you know, it's knowing what you can plant in what place or where certain animals are that you can hunt them, or it connects you to the landscape. And in 20th and 21st century America, you know, basically since World War II, we've really lost that with our food. Our food comes from the supermarket, and before that, we don't know. We don't know who grew it. We don't know where it grew. We don't know how it grew. We didn't watch it grow. We don't have any sense of, is this a good year for the harvest or a bad year? And I think that there's you know, we have this sort of sense in this culture that, well, you know, we're all well-fed. We're all you know, nobody's going hungry, but actually my point is that I think we're actually really very much hungry. We are going hungry. We're not well fed. Our bellies are full. But, you know, I mean, we have ample evidence that we're not being very well nourished by our bellies being full, you know, in terms of the nutrition that we're getting. But also our souls aren't being fed.
Peter,
yeah.
I was just going to say, let me throw this over to Peter. You know, we talk about coming together over food, and you're one of the things that you do in your restaurant all the time is you bring together people who write about food. You bring together people for these dinners on topics like this. Do you find you're creating, you know, in the city a community of people that are more connected with the food they eat and where it comes from and ideas like this?
Absolutely. The dinner series, which I've been doing for probably 14 years now, is very much it's constructed so that we're all eating together. There's the conversation is a single conversation, and the tables are large tables of 8, 10, and 12. And so that people who don't know each other are talking. Maybe they're talking about who they are, or maybe they're talking about the ideas that are stimulated by the speaker and by the meal. And so that so I have a decades-long conversation going on in the restaurant with a very wide group of people about food and our connection to food production in this country, and how do we write it in a way that make sure that we have food for the future, or also just to celebrate it because there's some wonderful things to eat and enjoy.
Jessica Prentice and Peter Hoffman, I want to thank you for continuing your decades-long conversation with me and Mark and with our listeners. It's been great.
Thank you so much for having us, and I hope to see you and meet you at the dinner.
Right. Yeah,
it is on Monday, November 6th. At Savoy Restaurant, starts at 6:30.
And we're going to put that up. We're going to put a link to Peter's website and Jessica's website, as well as the information about the dinner, up on our website.
Oh,
so,
great. Thank
so,
you,
absolutely. So anybody out there who's listening or listening in podcast land, Savoy Restaurant, New York City, November 6th, go to dinner and join the conversation.
Thanks for being with us today, guys.
Great. Thank you. Thanks so much.
You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45. Economy Paper and Restaurant Supply Company is the oldest dealership in New Jersey. They've been equipping and supplying restaurants since 1932, and they know that to make great food, you need great equipment. You need equipment that doesn't break down, and you can't pay too much for it. Whether you need an emergency replacement or a wholesale kitchen renovation, Economy's knowledge, experience, and integrity are indispensable. Economy Paper and Restaurant Supply is a recognized dealer for all major brands, and they specialize in custom fabrication and ventilation. At Economy, they've got all the tools you need to get the job done, all in one place, all priced right, and delivered to your door. Economy is the only dealer in New Jersey that's been approved for on-site demonstrations of the Rational Combi Oven. The Rational Combi Oven is an innovative combination of convection and adjustable steam oven. It's a powerful and versatile tool in your kitchen's arsenal. They also supply competitively priced paper products and all the non-food supplies every restaurant needs. You can visit the Economy Demo Kitchen on Broad Street in Clifton, New Jersey. You can also visit economysupply.com, then call them at 973-279-5500. That's 973-279-5500. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis, stage left at Catherine Lombardi Restaurant. Absolutely want to point people to Savoy Restaurant to go to this dinner to see Jessica and Peter, and maybe the Restaurant Guys will be there, or at least one of us.
Well, we've had Peter.
The one without kids, I'm guessing.
We've had Peter on the show before. And, you know, his mission, such a great mission, you know, one of the first people really out there going to the Green Market every day.
He opened 3 years before we did. And when we opened is when he started his dinner series. And we started our dinner series shortly after we opened. And, you know, the things that he cares about are the things that we care about. And he is one of the smartest guys cooking in New York.
For anybody who hasn't gone to a dinner like this where you know, maybe you go in a group of two or four and then you end up sitting at a table of six or eight or ten. That I think they really can be fascinating because generally, if you're going to a dinner like this, generally you're somebody who's kind of, you know, interested in what's going on. And,
yeah.
And
if you're not a foodie, you're not going to this.
Right. Chances are you're a foodie is exactly what I was about to say. You know, you're kind of interested in the food and what's happening. And so generally at these types of events, we get very, very interesting people. And the conversations and friendships that are struck up at these events, you know, it's always remarkable. And as people come, you know, you try and assemble people. But a lot of the people who are coming to the events, I don't necessarily know them by name. So people just kind of get lumped together. And I'm always amazed at the different types of people who end up talking to each other and getting into some real interesting discussions at events like this.
And when you... Look, there are two ways to do this. I mean, there's the ubiquitous wine dinner. Mm-hmm. We do wine dinners a lot, but look at the event and ask about the event at restaurants. These dinners are often, and sometimes even if the food isn't great at some local trattoria, but you know the mm-hmm. people are nice, and it's the you know whatever reason the zucchini flower dinner in summertime, mm-hmm. whatever the reason is, it can be a great social experience, which is, again, I think one of the greatest restaurants uses to which a restaurant can be put. What I try to avoid, or it can be like the truffle menu, which we're going to have for, you mm-hmm. know, a bajillion dollars, you know, you know, or it can be the Barolo dinner, you know, that's put together. What I want to avoid, and this is something that I see in New Jersey a lot, and I see throughout the country a lot, especially in some places that may be far from a large city. Very often, like, the national sales manager of Mondavi will be there to give you a Mondavi dinner. And that's no shot on Mondavi. I think Mondavi is a fine company. But I don't want to have the national sales manager of anybody at my dinner, okay?
Right.
Unless it's his day off and it's the national sales manager from a, you know, a pipe company or something. if you go to a dinner, what you want to do is go find some place where people care. Now, Peter Hoffman knows everybody in the business. His food is very seasonal. And he's cooking from this book because he thinks the ideas are cool. And so, and he's working with the author of the book. So the author's going to be there. There's an idea behind the dinner that makes sense. And you know it's going to be great. And if I say Peter Hoffman can cook, I hope that you all trust me that Peter Hoffman's restaurant can turn out some great food. But frankly, even if this were a place and it weren't a Peter's and it was a chef that I didn't know, I would go because the idea is interesting. I'm very leery of the wine dinner, and I always ask if there's going to be – and I don't think you need to have someone come and be a guest speaker at a wine dinner. When we have wine dinners, it's either the owner of the winery or the winemaker himself that comes. Because, frankly, I don't care what you sell. I'm not going to bore my patrons with your sales staff.
And that's the whole thing. What I don't want is someone who's going to give a sales pitch to my customers. And, frankly, as a consumer, I don't want to have a sales pitch pitched to me when I'm going to one of these
things. Like when I get those things that says, come to the Poconos for the weekend for free, I don't go. You know why? I don't want to hear your sales pitch. But if it's somebody who makes great wine... You know, is it somebody who's selling a painting or is it somebody who painted the painting?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I'm much more interested in the latter. And frankly, when a restaurant, I mean, we'll do dinners some night. We'll look at our Barolo section right now, for instance. That's it's a type of wine that comes from Italy. And we just have gotten some extraordinary Barolos we've collected. I'm thinking about putting together a Barolo dinner over Thanksgiving weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to invite anybody. I'm going to do it. You know, and we'll sit down with the chef and you know, you and I will pick our favorite Barolos and we'll sit down. And the thing about it is when you get a restaurant that's your local restaurant, not your chain, and you start going to the dinners like this, if they have a series like this, if they do it every month or every other month, you start to see the same faces and friendships start to form over time. And there's a community of the people who go to the dinners at that
restaurant.
We have
people who come to every single one of the things and, you know, they're our friends now. There's no doubt about it.
I'm thinking of one couple in particular who used to live in the area and they would come into the restaurant all the time. Well, they live far away now. Far away now. And they don't come to they don't come to dinner very often. But on nights when we have special dinners, we'll see them five or six times a year. They'll come in for that special occasion. And it's to be part of a community. You know, I like the way Peter put that. He said, you know, for 14 years now, I've had an ongoing discussion with a group of people. And some of the individual players may come and go, but it's an ongoing discussion. And that's what a restaurant is about. That's what food is all about.
My favorite part of the interview, Jessica said, you know, companion is someone that, by definition,
someone with whom you break bread.
Yeah. And that, you know, that really says it all. It says everything that we want to say in this show, that, you know, break bread with the people that you want to spend extra time with, get to know people by breaking bread with them, and the world would be a better place.
And in New Jersey, the mafia code of ethics of friendship is someone with whom you break heads. That's very little New Jerseyana.
You're fired. You're going to have to leave now. Okay. I'll be doing the rest of the show.
Oh, Lord Almighty. Well, you know, we talked about pawpaws earlier. And actually, you know what? When we come back, I found some information on how people out there, people always get mad at us. We tell them about something and then we don't tell them how to get it. We'll tell you how next season you can get your hands on some pawpaws, which is the fruit that's native to the northeastern United States that it's been hard to find heretofore, but you can find them now, and they're in season next August, and we'll tell you about how to get them. And also pawpaw trees to plant in your backyard. They're really wonderful shrubs as well. We'll tell you about that in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. Stage left in Cafe Lombardi Restaurants, downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. But you knew that.
I knew it. I know, but I'm sitting in the same room with you.
We talked early in the show about the pawpaw. The pawpaw is a fruit that's indigenous to the Appalachians mostly, but to the northeastern United States in general.
And almost none of us had ever eaten it.
And actually, I think in like central East Coast as well, you'll find pawpaws. Mm-hmm. Hard to find. Peter did a pawpaw dinner at his restaurant back in September. We had pawpaws on the menu very briefly, but they were so hard to get, we weren't able to keep getting them. We're going to get them again next year. Pawpaws.
We got them one season and then we gave up.
They're like, yeah, exactly. Then Peter blazed the trail again this year, and we're back on the pawpaw wagon. Pawpaw, P-A-W-P-A-W. You can find out about them online. You can plant them in your backyard. They taste like a mango, not exactly like a mango, but texturally they're similar to a mango, and they grow right around here. You can grow them in your backyard. If you go to petersonpawpaws.com, that's P-E-T-E-R-S-O-N pawpaws.com, we'll put this up on our website, you can find out how to get yourself a pawpaw tree.
And for people who live in this area, and I know a lot of us live here in Jersey, The deer won't eat them.
Yeah, deer don't eat pawpaws.
So you have a huge advantage there over all the other things that you can grow that the deer will just ravage, but the deer don't eat pawpaws.
A book that talks about how to garden them is called Uncommon Fruits for Every Garden. Lee Reich, we'll also put that up on our website. And if you want to buy pawpaws for yourself, mark it on your calendar to do next year. You should start thinking about it in July. And you'll get it in late August and September. If you go to always on our website, you'll see a link for heritagefoodsusa.com. You can go there and actually figure out how to get your hands on some pawpaws.
The toughest thing about pawpaw is it doesn't cross-pollinate very easily.
Yeah, you can find out how to do that yourself at home, but I just buy the damn things. I live in Jersey City, and they're delicious. You can slice them open. There's a little seed in them. They make great They make great fruit smoothies because they have sort of the texture of a mango. They make great ingredients in sauces. And, you know, it's one of those secret weapon things where people say,
We made a killer sorbet out of it. It was really, really good.
It almost tastes like sorbet if you chilled it on its own, and they freeze. They're really great. Well, so there's a new fruit for you to try next year, and then you can put some up and freeze it, and we'll get back on the bandwagon as well. Check out Savoy Restaurant. You can find out how to find them on our website, restaurantguysradio.com, and you can sign up for his mailing list. He always has interesting lectures and dinners there as well. Hope you've enjoyed the hour listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.